heard the final two verses that we heard this morning were the verses where Lord Brahma is with complete focus of attention glorifying the personality of Godhead, who is the object of his devotion, from whom he has derived all of his abilities to create. And Brahma has indicated that his position is the sub-creator, taking what the supreme creator has given him, and then he, like a gardener, he grows seeds, and the seed supplier is the supreme Narayana. So those verses, they're even very nice to hear. Narayana Paraveda, Narayana Deva Narayanad, Driven Nagaja, Narayana Paro Loka, Narayana Paramakaha, Narayana Paro Yogo, Narayana Param Tapaha, Narayana Param Jnanam, Narayana Para Gatihi. So these next verses is a combination of answers to two questions. What's the background of creation and how is it carried out? Those questions are from text number 2. So 17, 18, 19, and 20. This sarga, this is what Brahma does. Inspired by him only, I discover what is already created by him, Narayana, under his vision as the all-pervading Supersoul, and I am also created by him only. So that's very clear. His activity is under the jurisdiction of another. His existence is caused by the existence of another. Narada was not sure, are you supreme or what? Is somebody supreme above you? And are you getting your energy self-sufficiently, or are you deriving your energy from some other source? Is your knowledge coming from you, or is your knowledge self-born? So the answer is very clear. I'm under Narayana. And Prabhupada, in the purport, he takes the principle that Brahma is conveying, and he says, as it is true for Brahma, so it is true for all of us. That is, he takes these two categories of things. Somebody discovers something, and somebody creates something. The somebody that discovers something in false ego wants to take credit for discovering something, rather than giving credit to the one who gave him the ability to discover the something and the something. Acting through false ego and pride. So Prabhupada writes, the Lord inspires the individual soul to create what is already created by the Lord. Is that not what technology is? One understands how something works in nature, and understanding the push and pull of how it works in nature, you reproduce it, and that's what technology is. Is it not? Part of the stress management spiritual approach course, that a little seminar that I give as an example. Do you know who is George de Menstrel? Nobody knows who George de Menstrel is. And then show a picture of a dog with burrs on him, because George de Menstrel lived in Switzerland, and he would regularly go for walks, and when he went for a walk, on his coat and on his dog when he came back found all these cocklebirds. And something like that can be frustrating because you got to spend all this time taking this stuff off your coat and maybe cutting the fur on your dog. And so instead of getting frustrated, he got a microscope out or some kind of magnifying instrument and looked, how does this work? So there's a little something and it catches. So we thought, I wonder if we can do something in technology with this little thing that's there in nature. And then he created Velcro, became a multimillionaire, and instead of being frustrated, he became wealthy by taking a stressful situation and looking at it as an opportunity. So, I mean, they study how mosquitoes fly so they can go zoom and zoom or zoom or zoom in any direction. So Prabhupada challenges them, the scientists, make one mosquito. They're trying. And so many things of technology. But they'll not make a mosquito that can create more mosquitoes. Male and female mosquito machine. So that's in our field, that something that God has created. But Brahma, there wasn't even anything yet. So he just had to take the subtle impression of the thing and make the thing. But he's indicating to Narada the seed impression of the thing came from the Supreme, came from Narayan. Now he's going to, we discussed this morning as well as yesterday afternoon, what role the Brahmajyoti has. Prabhupada is going to take us to another look at that in the act of creation. We'll come to that later. So, what is a discovery? It's something that already exists. And the person who put it there to already exist also gives the ability to discover it. Now, there's some credit to the person who is the discoverer, because there's some kind of piety that entitles him to be endowed with the discovering ability. And then he gets recognition for discovering something that already exists. And depending upon his sense of pride, he'll acknowledge the Supreme Lord, or he won't. He'll say, I get credit for this discovery, and I give it my name. And by the goodwill of the Lord, a discoverer of something of the word of the in the world is accredited as the discoverer. So it's all, there's the cause of all causes is the chapter title. So the deluding potency also comes from the Supreme. Matak smitir gyanam apohanamcha sarvasya chalam riddhi sannivishto matak smitir gyanam apohanamcha. Krishna is situated in the heart as super soul. Before Brahma begins, Narada says, you know all about the soul and the super soul, so please explain this. So he does understand all about the soul and the super soul, and not just information-wise. He's realized this knowledge. And so he's describing how it works. The deluding potency works this way, and the spiritual potency works this way. And he's advising Narada to come to the spiritual side. And Prabhupada gives us the example Christopher Columbus. The Western world already existed, but people in Europe didn't know about it. And so he went sailing across the ocean blue, and there was America in 1492. There he was. So he gets the credit for discovering something that was already there. Where did the ability come from? Where did the energy of a claim come from? From the same person to put the place there to begin with. Anyway, so the spiritual perspective on discovery or creating something, whether it's Velcro or computer technology or something or something or something, the credit goes to Krishna. One must therefore be voluntarily willing to render service unto the Lord, and thus the Lord will empower the doer in proportion to his surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord. Without giving names, I'll just mention that there was one devotee who was doing a research project, and he was being paid substantially to do the research project, only it wasn't working out. The solution wasn't coming. He was spending time trying this, trying that, trying this, trying that, trying this, trying that. And they were paying him a reasonable salary, and he felt, you know, I can't just take money from these people to try this and try that. I have to come up with a solution. So then he approached me and said, you know, what should I do? Should I quit, or should I keep trying, or what should I do? And the response that I gave was this response. You're worshiping a particular deity, just like Prabhupada gave us the following prayer when Prabhupada's health was bad. My dear Lord Krishna, if you so desire, please make the health of Srila Prabhupada such that he can continue and guide us for some time, because we very much need his guidance. You can pray like that to Krishna. So I said, you can pray like this to Krishna. My dear Lord, if you so desire, not for my purpose, but for bringing recognition to you, because these people at work knew that he's a devotee. And he goes to work with Tilak, he's a devotee. If you so desire, for the purpose of giving appreciation, greater appreciation to you, please give some indication how this puzzle can be solved. And he continued to work for nearly a month. And then one of those inspiration moments happened. It was just in a conversation with another person, a friend, and during the course of the conversation with a friend, he made comment about some kind of something that's going on over here, and then it all fell together. That something that's going on over there wasn't a solution to this problem, but it gave a key to the solution to this problem, and all at once it just came. Boom. He wrote it down. Krishna inspired. He caused the circumstance, and the person knew, it's Krishna, it's not me. Krishna. And the purpose of this happening is for Krishna's glorification. And sure enough, when the solution in a written form was presented, the company was very happy, and they understood, because of the person as well as what the person said, this all happened because Krishna made it happen. And they, you know, depending in proportion to their degree of faith, they could understand this was caused by the piety of this individual. The devotion of this individual allowed this thing to happen. We got a good guy here working for us, because he never causes any trouble, and he has this special pipeline to Krishna. Some pats on the back and the next assignment. And this devotee was feeling very appreciative of the kindness that Krishna had extended. Not just because I succeeded instead of failed, it wasn't that kind of happiness, the happiness of a relationship with Krishna. So that's even in worldly, you know, career life. One's relationship with Krishna can be supported and strengthened and experienced directly. I mentioned this the other day also, that in this Bhagavad Gita Interactive, in the section under Ishwara, you click on Ishwara and you play what the Bhagavad Gita Interactive says, and at one point it says, through meditation and through work, one can realize the presence of Super Soul within the heart. And persons in the workplace wonder, how the heck do you do that? Because when you're at our Bhakti Riksha group, one lady was saying, when you're at work, you're at work. Your mind can't be over there on Krishna. How do you realize, what to speak of, keep the mind always on Krishna? How do you realize Krishna? Through work. When you work in devotion, you can realize Krishna. Krishna will reciprocate in proportion to one's desire to be his instrument in any circumstance of life. And one who has faith in that and applies themselves diligently according to that faith, they'll realize the fact. And to others, it's just a head-scratching puzzle. How do you do that? So in this little exercise I'm trying to illustrate in a couple of different ways, the process of realization of one's relationship with Krishna by faith, by submission, and by taking those things that one hears from scripture and from spiritual master, and you just faithfully apply them. Not blind faith, but reasoned faith. The principle should apply in any circumstance of life. And voila, you get realization. Krishna is for real. Krishna is loving. Krishna is all. He supplies intelligence. He also supplies forgetfulness to those who want to be discoverers or creators in an atheistic aptitude. Now, behind those persons who are atheistic creators and discoverers, there's some degree of piety, but it's misapplied piety. Just like Hiranyakashipu, he underwent great austerities. Or Jarasandha, he was a great observer of giving in charity to brahmanas. He wanted those punya points so he could destroy. Piety and the fruits of piety for the purpose of ignorant activities is duskriti. Namam duskritini mudha. Such duskritis, they never surrender to Krishna. But they may do some acts of piety in order to get some kriti to do some destructive or abominable thing. Vrikasura underwent great austerities, severe, crazy austerities, in order to get some benediction from Lord Shiva. The benediction he wanted from Lord Shiva was to touch the head of somebody so that their head would break into 100 pieces. And then he wanted to turn that on Lord Shiva, just to test it out and see if it worked. Banasura, great devotee of Lord Shiva, he was given 1,000 arms because he was so expert at playing musical instruments while Lord Shiva was dancing. He gave him 1,000 arms. He could play really nicely. Imagine Subal with 1,000 arms. But then he wanted the benediction from Lord Shiva that he could meet someone who would be an equal in combat because I can't find anybody and just go and just bash mountains with my thousand arms and rocks go flying out all directions, but who's an equal to fight with? Lord Shiva said, you're so proud. You will meet that equal who will destroy you. Lord Krishna. So, there are these, just as Chaitanya Maharaj's yesterday afternoon seminar, there's the mind and there's the demoniac. How the bewildering influence of the material energy works, it works in proportion to one's lack of surrender or adversity to the Supreme Lord, and the deluding potency lifts in proportion to one's service attitude to the Supreme Lord. And that's the force of this whole second canto, is to inspire the humble service attitude to the Supreme Lord. So by, once again, as we go through the second canto, let us find at the other end the fruit of a humble service attitude to the Supreme Lord and stay fixed in that conception, supported by this wonderful, wonderful message of Shukadeva Goswami. Prabhupada amplifies this point by a nice verse from the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. 11th chapter is the universal form chapter. And towards the end of that chapter, we find the verse where Krishna inspires Arjuna to enter into the Kurukshetra battle. At the end line is Nimitta Matram Bhavya Savya Sachin. Nimitta Matram. If you study in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's this Nimitta phrase. There's Nimitta Maya and Upatan Maya. It gets real technical, I won't go too far. But it's the causal principle of material nature. Material, just like wombs of mothers, the explanation goes in Chaitanya Charitamrita, wombs of mothers do two things. It supplies ingredients and it supplies a chamber in which the body of a living entity will grow. The father supplies the seed and the mother supplies the chamber and the ingredients. And one of them is Nimitta and the other is Upadan. Maya, the features of, so material nature, prakriti, has these two divisions, just as wombs of mother have these two functions. So what Krishna is saying to Arjuna is, Nimitta Matram Bhavya Savya Sachin, become this Nimitta cause. Now, we know that wombs of mothers don't produce children just by hanging around, because they have the potential. It just doesn't happen that way. But it can be an instrumental cause when other causes are introduced. And so Arjuna is being instructed by Krishna to be this causal principle of the battle, which he's already seen in the universal form. The outcome is already decided. The outcome is already decided. See the tumbling bodies of the Kauravas tumbling into the gnashing mouths of the universal form, and bodies are being devoured by this universal form. It's already done, Arjuna. You can be an instrument. I'm instructing you, be an instrument. The cause is something else. You're an instrumental cause. And so the instruction that we're receiving in the purport is, we who have some purpose on behalf of the Supreme Lord during this lifetime to do, whatever that something is. Different persons have different somethings. Do it in the consciousness of being an instrument of the Supreme Lord. Then you're rescued from false ego. You're rescued from the false sense of proprietorship over what comes out of that activity. Like Arjuna, the death of the Kauravas, you're not responsible for that. It's already decided by the Supreme Lord. Don't do it, the outcome is already decided. Do it, the outcome is already decided. Just be the instrument or not, that's your choice. That's a choice. We can be the instrument of Krishna's will or not. And so, in the conclusion of the purport, Prabhupada refers to a same notion, just coming from a different angle, different perspective. He quotes from the Katha Upanishad, where the absolute truth is described in the Katha Upanishad as Sarva Bhuta Antaratma. Sarva Bhuta, we know, means all living entities. Sarva Bhuta. Antaratma, he's the Lord within all living entities, who directs everything for the surrendered soul. Now not all souls are surrendered. And so there's another feature that the Lord presents for those that don't surrender, and that's the Brahmayam Sarvabhutani Yantarudhani Mayaya. They're placed under the care of material nature, and they're being carried on the machine of material nature. Just like Prabhupada gives this example, you get in a car, or you get in an airplane, or you get in a train, you sit down, and you start moving, because the machine is carrying you. 30 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour in a plane, 500 miles an hour. You're just sitting still, but you're zooming along at 500 miles an hour, because you're in the machine of the airplane. And similarly, living entities who don't surrender to Krishna, they're placed under the care of the external energy, and they're being moved along. Events happen. And that's the question that Narada is asking. How do events happen? And Brahma's answer is they happen by the external energy of the Lord. That's going to come up in the very next verse. It comes from him. He gives the seed. I do the gardening, and he makes it happen. The act, so same for us. We come into this world. There's a whole lot of stuff here already. We do something. If we act in false ego, we're thinking, I'm doing that something. I'm causing the result. Krishna's advice in Bhagavad Gita is never consider like that. There's one verse where he says, never consider yourself to be the cause of an activity. Never consider yourself to be the cause of the result of the activity. And never consider yourself to be inducing others to act. So much of our life we spend trying to induce other persons to act. Never consider like that. But consider always that material nature is carrying on all these activities. We're just on the conveyor belt, and the conveyor belt's moving, and we're like little kids thinking we're making the conveyor belt move. It's not so. Material nature is acting, and we're in the care of that material nature. And we can surrender it to Krishna and be off the conveyor belt. Daviyeshu gunamayi mamamaya dhuratyaya mam eva yeka padyante mayamam etam tarantite. We can be in the field of the internal energy instead of the external energy. So, there's a choice. It's a free will choice. And for those who take the free will choice of directing consciousness to the personality of Godhead, then he acts as the intelligence giver to get us out of the material existence and back to the spiritual existence. Yena mam upiyanti te. Tadami bodhi yogam tam yena mam upiyanti te. What's the eligibility for that? Tesham satata yuktanam vajatam kriti purvakam. Dadami bodhi yogam tam yena mam upiyanti te. That's a choice. And then there's the other choice. Brahmayam sarva bhutani yanta rudani maya ya. And then there's degrees. It's not one or a zero or on or off. It's not a rocker on switch. It's a variable switch, a dimmer switch. It can be, I'll surrender to Krishna 30%. Okay, Krishna accepts 30%. Or more or less, and proportionate to our surrender. This is the one must therefore be voluntarily willing to surrender unto the Lord, and thus the Lord will empower the doer in proportion to his surrender unto the lotus feet of the Lord. So this is how it works. The creation is there, and we have our options and degrees within those options, and the essence of the option is Krishna or not Krishna. Spiritual energy, illusory energy. Considering ourselves dependent upon Krishna, considering ourselves independent from Krishna. Acting as a servant, acting through false ego. And ranges in between. So that's answering one of the questions that Narada asked. What's the feature of this material creation? Can you describe how it is made up? Then he also wants to know, how do you do it? So now the next 2-3 verses describe how he does it. Brahma says, text 18, the Supreme Lord is pure spiritual form, transcendental to all material qualities. But for the sake of the creation of the material world and its maintenance and annihilation, he accepts through his external energy the material modes of nature called goodness, passion, and ignorance. Now this is a big mystery. The mystery question goes something like this. How does something material arise from something spiritual? It's a theological dilemma. And, you know, different theologies answer that question in different ways, and that's why you have different theologies. Or demarcations of different theologies. And some kind of fudge it, some kind of, you know, get a smoothie blender and mix a few of these and those, and you can't really distinguish, there's not a whole lot of clarity. But Brahma's very clear. This is Sambandh again. This is the relationship between God and his energies. And he has, we discussed this morning, he has three categories of energies and subcategories under those categories. Spiritual, material, and marginal. The spiritual has its categories, the material has a whole lot of categories. And all of those energies are under the energetic. And even the Brahmajyoti is an impersonal manifestation of the energetic personality of Godhead. So in the purport, Prabhupada uses a very nice metaphor, and see if you can follow the metaphor. The metaphor is, there's the sun in the clear sky. Note that there's no clouds in the clear sky. The energy of the sun shines, and the energy of the sun creates vapor, water vapor, and then the vapor forms clouds. Whoops, now you have the energy of the sun creating a cloud in the sky. Does the cloud in the sky affect the sun? No. The cloud in the sky would not exist without the sun, and of course without the sky, and of course without the water, and of course without the will of the Supreme Lord. But it's generated by the sun. Similarly, the modes of nature are generated by the Supreme Lord, who has a spiritual form, fully transcendental, meaning not influenced by the modes of nature, but for the purpose of creation, he manifests, here the language is he accepts, through his external energy, modes of nature. Now how did that work? That went kind of smooth, but still we have this, how does something material come from something spiritual? Question. It's an energy of the Supreme Lord, and in the ultimate sense, even the material energy is spiritual. It's just inferior energy. We call it material because, listen, to watch the shell game. Very, very important. Here's the shell, and underneath the shell is the pea. This energy that covers a living entity has a diluting potency. Potential, depending upon the attitude of the living entity, that diluting potency can turn into a facility for serving the Supreme Lord and realizing the Supreme Lord if the attitude, if the disposition of heart of the living entity is, I want my relationship with Krishna to be disclosed to me. Then that very same energy acts to disclose Krishna, but if the attitude is a bad attitude, then it serves to cover Krishna, to cover the vision of Krishna like the cloud covers the vision of the sun because it blocks the cloud. But the sun doesn't become blocked, just our vision of the sun becomes blocked. The diluting potency, similarly, is a feature of one of Krishna's energies, his external energy, or apara prakriti in the language of Bhagavad Gita. It's one of Krishna's energies. He says it's Krishna's energies is spiritual. It acts in a material way, material meaning forgetfulness of Krishna way, because of the potency that it carries. It's one of Krishna's, that deluding potency is one of Krishna's potencies, under Krishna's direction. Krishna can call out the deluding potency. Maya, come here. Stand behind me. Now that living entity can see me. But if Krishna doesn't direct like that, the living entity is yogamaya samavrita. Naham prakasha sarvasya yogamaya samavrita. Once Prabhupada was asked, Swamiji, what would happen? Your Hare Krishna movement is growing so rapidly. One time it was. That the whole world may become Krishna conscious. And what will happen if the whole world becomes Krishna conscious? Prabhupada's answer was, don't worry, it won't happen. But if it were to happen, then this place would become Vaikuntha. That was his answer. This material world becomes the spiritual world if it's fully used in Krishna's service. But we call it the material world because it's seen in that way. Now it's the inferior energy. It's not to say that in the kingdom of God, in Vaikuntha, there's all this material energy that can still delude the living entities. The Sachit Ananda Vigraha potency is in the spiritual world. And there's none of this temporary matter business. But the temporary matter can act in a spiritual way if connected with the internal potency through the medium of devotional service. So, here's how Prabhupada discusses this. In other words, the material modes of nature, being products of the energy of the Lord, are certainly connected with the Lord. But the connection is just like that between the master and the servants. How's that connection? The material energy serves the will of Krishna. If Krishna directs, deliver that living entity by the influence of the internal potency, that energy just gets converted. And if Krishna doesn't give that signal, the same energy acts in a different way, binds. So the servant may not be directly, it's not the master, but the servant, as Maya acts as the servant of Krishna, she deludes the living entity. In a thankless task, but Krishna doesn't interfere because Maya is his servant, and she, this is described very nicely in Sri Brahma Samhita. She wants that unqualified living entity stay away from Krishna. Get away from Krishna. So she keeps them really busy with other stuff, so much so that if they're invited to Sunday feast program, they say, I'm too busy, I don't have time. I've got all this stuff I've got to do. Don't have time. Please take this book. Sorry, don't have time. Please chant the holy name. Chant, chant, chant. Can't, can't, can't. You know that cartoon. The free will of the living entity is the principle that allows the deluding potency or the liberating experience to take place. So now those living entities that say no to Krishna, the modes of nature are there to create variety. And Krishna manifests them. Here it says he accepts them for the purpose of creation, although he remains unaffected. Like the sun remains unaffected by the cloud that's created by the sun. Unaffected. Then the next verse, I think I'll just cover this next verse because of the time factor. There's that effect, the modes of nature effect, then becomes a cause for another outcome that then becomes, so that outcome becomes, there's an effect that becomes a cause for another effect, and the sequence of cause and effects goes on. This is technology. Cause becomes an effect, or creates an effect, then becomes a cause that creates an effect, then becomes a cause that creates an effect. So the cause of all causes is over here. That's Krishna. Narayana, Prabheda, and so on. Then there's the living entity. That's the avidya karma covers him. I want to enjoy apart from Krishna. I want to create something apart from Krishna. I want to know something apart from Krishna giving me the knowledge to know that something. That's illusion. In comes illusion to cover the living entity with these three modes. These three modes of material nature being further manifested as matter, knowledge, and activities put the eternally transcendental living entity under the conditions of cause and effect and make him responsible for such activities. Uh-oh. It just happened. Just like that. So, this is Sambandha again. The living entities are pure. They also have nothing to do with modes of nature, as Krishna has nothing to do with the modes of nature. But they're tiny, and they want this false independence from the Supreme Lord, and so the modes of nature transform into matter, activities, and knowledge. So we'll go to the third canto. Principles of Material Nature, chapter Rokyapila, instructing Devahuti. When the Lord glances over Pradhan, the living entities are carried along with the time energy, and with contact of the living entities are carrying karma. They activate the modes of nature. The modes of nature are already there within Pradhan. They're activated, plus the living entities have a history of involvement with particular modes of nature, so the whole thing starts to differentiate. This undifferentiated sum total of material substance called Pradhan starts to differentiate. The first element that separates is false ego. No surprise, right? And then according to the modes of nature, in the mode of goodness, false ego in the mode of goodness, the mind, our dear friend, becomes manifest. In the mode of passion, intelligence, which is required for fruitive activity, separates. And in the mode of false ego, in the mode of ignorance, matter separates. The five gross material elements, and following that, the five knowledge acquiring and five working senses. So you have, you know, the ingredients for things happening, like avidya karma, activities in ignorance. And the living entities have desire, so that stirs the opportunity into action. So because of this differentiation of the modes of nature, then manifesting matter, intelligence, and activities, that then the living entities perform activities and they're held responsible for those activities. They're placed under this cause and effect. So in the purport, Prabhupada details what does it mean by, from the verse, the cause and effect. The living entity, eternally pure, eternally transcendental, is placed under this cause and effect principle. So it's adiatmika, adidaivika, and adibhautika. It's, you know, the machine starts to move. The conveyor belt starts to happen. You just got on the conveyor belt and it just started to move. Adiatmika, adidaivika, and adibhautika. Here's how Prabhupada explains the three. First, he says that even the best of scientists doesn't get it, because it's subtle. It can't be understood by their own capacity, only if it's disclosed to them. And generally, material scientists don't go to the scriptures in the right mood, and so they don't have this disclosed to them. But this is behind the conditioned events. Behind the material manifestations, there are adibhautika, adiatmika, and adidaivika actions which the living entity in the mode of ignorance cannot see. The adibhautika manifestation entails repetition of births and deaths with old age and diseases. That starts to happen. Adidaivika, adiatmika manifestation conditions the spirit soul, and adidaivika manifestation is the controlling system, the devas. They see that the system is set up and they maintain it. There's the adiatmika, the miseries that are caused by the living entity's own mind and his own existence, and adibhautika, birth, death, old age, and miseries caused in that way. So Prabhupada says, these are the material manifestations of cause and effect and the sense of responsibility of the conditioned actors. Now, some persons don't have that sense of responsibility, or they choose to ignore that sense of responsibility. They choose to ignore their conscience that says, you do something bad, you're going to be held responsible. Nobody's looking. Here I go. Or they don't even think like that. They're demoniac. They think, this is good. Destruction. It's good. Causing other living entities pain and suffering. It's good. As long as it's at least it's legitimate, as long as I get what I want. Because that's what life is about, making me happy. We heard this yesterday very nicely from Jayadvaita Maharaj. So the justifications and the material intelligence, all the equipment necessary for mode of ignorance is supplied for those that choose the mode of ignorance way of acting in the world. So Narada has asked Brahma, how does this work? So he's describing, here's the anatomy of how it works. And it's a chain of causes and effects. And Krishna describes, once you're caught up in the chain of causes and effects, it's really difficult to get out. It's a strong network. I'll read just one more verse, that's what I had planned. O Brahmana Narada, text 20, the superseer, the transcendental Lord, is beyond the perception of the material senses of the living entities because of the above mentioned three modes of nature. But he is the controller of everyone, including me. So if you don't see the Supreme Controller, who is the Supreme Controller of everyone and everything at all times and all circumstances, you're going to have to come up with another conclusion about how things happen. According to the modes of nature, there's lots of explanations of how things are happening. And one category that Prabhupada chooses to speak about is the impersonalist and how they see how things are happening. They say it's just false. It's not happening. Brahman Satya Jagat Mithya. Just like a dream, it's not happening. Go ahead and hit me. And I'll tell you, you didn't hit me. It didn't happen. And I'll hit you and I'll tell you it didn't happen because nothing's real. It's all illusion. It doesn't exist. But there is one thing that does exist, and that's Brahman. And this is a very, not necessarily to that extreme, but we heard it at our Bhakti Viksha group, you know, it's out there in people's minds. In the ultimate analysis, it's all one. There's a formless Brahman that's beyond all of this stuff that isn't real. And all of that stuff that isn't real comes from that Brahman. And all we have to do is identify ourselves with that Brahman and, you know, the dream's over. It's all one. We just merge with that bliss of Brahman. That's not at all what Scripture's saying here. There is, the question is what's in the background. The background isn't, it's this undifferentiated Brahman. It's the personality of Godhead, Krishna. And then he does these various things with his energies for the living entities who have a rebellious attitude toward them. He puts them under a whammy for a while and tries through that method to help them understand that wasn't the right disposition. You need to change your attitude. You need to awaken your dormant devotion. So as the materialists, so also the impersonalists are covered by these modes of the material energy such that they can't see. Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrata. They cannot see. Even face to face with Krishna, they cannot see. Prabhupada writes, the Lord is not approachable by everyone because he is curtained by his yogamaya potency. But one should not wrongly conclude that the Lord was formerly unmanifested and has now manifested himself in a human form. This misconception of the formlessness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is due to the yogamaya curtain of the Lord and can be removed only by the Supreme Will as soon as the conditioned soul surrenders unto him. So this knowledge that's being presented in the Bhagavatam is to kind of like gently ease us into the surrendered disposition, the humble service mood of surrendering to Krishna, because that's reality. And the other is illusion. In the Bhagavad Gita, there's a nice verse where Krishna is saying that Vitaraga Bhaya Krodha, in order to enter into the spiritual conception of life, one has to overcome these three things, Raga and Bhaya and Krodha. So Bhaya, or fear, Prabhupada explains, is the cause of this impersonal conception. And that conception arises in the following way. Individuality and personality has been a big grief for me in my life. And so I would like the spiritual side to be without personality, without variety. I'm fearful of accepting personality in the spiritual world. When I go to the spiritual world, live eternally, it's going to be like this. It's projecting a material conception upon what's not material. So out of fear of personality and variety and individuality, one projects the impersonal notion. One has to overcome that fear and trust Krishna, the personality of Godhead, and the variegated personal dealings that will exist in the spiritual world, minus the inebriety of false ego and the various ugly things of false ego. It doesn't exist in the spiritual world. Because this covering is there, one can't see Krishna. But through the association of a devotee of the Lord, here in this case, Brahma to Narada, or Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit, or any of us, the wonderful teachings of Srila Prabhupada to us who are Ajnana, Om Ajnana Timarandasya, in the darkness of ignorance, then one who has knowledge can help us, even just by presenting that knowledge, force us to open our eyes to see the light, to see, and in light you can see variety. You can see Krishna and the spiritual variegatedness of the spiritual world. When there's a little awakening of devotion, that's the qualification for getting free from these misconceptions. And the unqualified, those without devotion, cannot see. So the association of devotees is, it's not just important, it's essential. May all the persons assembled here never have to undergo extended periods of time without devotee association. It's difficult. And if you have that situation, try to create devotee association, like Prabhupada did when he came to America. And we're not Prabhupada, but we can learn from that example. He created devotee association for himself, or on behalf of his spiritual master as a nimitta matram, bhavya sabhi sachin. So the every town and village mandate given by Lord Chaitanya can become our service, but try to stay in devotee association as much as you can. At least carry the holy name with you and carry the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Guru and Gauranga with you, so that you can somehow give the gift of Krishna consciousness to others and create Vaishnava Sangha by that. Okay, so end of class. See if we have any discussion. Yes. Yeah. What's the question? There is something that we do, but so let me just repeat the question for the sake of the recording primarily. Nakartritmam, Nakarmani, Lokashas, Shujache Prabhu. One should never consider oneself to be the cause of action, the cause of the result of action, and so forth. How does that apply to devotional service when we're doing preaching? Aren't we doing some action and causing, bringing about the result? What we're doing is we're making some endeavor. That's what we're doing. We're not the cause of action. Krishna's potencies are the cause of action. There's five factors of action described in chapter 18. One of those is the endeavor. That's what we do. But we're not creating the action or the result of action or inducing others to act. Krishna is doing that through the agency of his energies. And we're the instrument making some endeavor. We're applying our little free will to do something that Krishna wants. We're endeavoring like that. That's what we're doing. And therefore when we say Krishna's mercy, that's what it means. You can endeavor all you like and it may never happen. If something happens that's wrong, then what? Do we say that's Krishna's mercy too? Here's what Prabhupada said. Something, there was some function that was supposed to happen and it didn't come out right. And someone said to Prabhupada, Krishna's mercy. And Prabhupada blasted him. You nonsense. Don't blame your nonsense on Krishna. It's your nonsense. Something comes out nicely, it's Krishna's mercy. Something is done foolishly is because we were inattentive or, you know, not applying ourselves properly. Now, on the other, let's say in a case where we hold a function and nobody shows up or a few people show up. If we make a sincere effort to the best of the intelligence that Krishna gives us, that's our success. Krishna is pleased. But if we do something foolish in the course of that endeavor, that's, it's our foolishness. That's not Krishna's mercy. Okay? Yes, Chita.
Maharaj, along the same lines, the topic of forgetfulness that Krishna said, Bhagavad Gita also associated with forgetfulness. So when we forget something, is that because we don't make the endeavor to try to remember it? Let's say something important. Or how should we look at forgetting something?
Well, the context of your question is our forgetting, and we just assume This is not a universal question. It's our forgetting. And our forgetfulness, it's due to negligence. It's not to Krishna's divine influence. Like Arjuna. It's our negligence. So Krishna gives the capacity of remembrance, and there are things certainly that we can endeavor to do, we can strive to do to make sure that we remember something, especially, as you said, something that's important. And we should have arrangements in our day-to-day, organization of our lives that we remember things that are important to do. And when you have a lot of things to do, it becomes, in one sense, more difficult to keep track of all those things that are important and need to be done. But that's a privilege for those that have a sincere desire to serve. And Krishna gives the ability. And if we become slack and inattentive, then something important becomes forgotten. It's not because, we've got a lot to do, Krishna's going to... Krishna should not be our servant, we're Krishna's servant. We make endeavors to serve Krishna. And we make appropriate endeavors, Krishna will give us remembrance. There are two kind of rules of thumb for remembering things. One is write them down. Prabhupada said, in Kali Yuga, remembering means write it down, like Vyas. Write it down. And then, of course you have to put the thing that you write down in a place where you're going to look at it. But that's the principle, is write it down, leaving the rest obvious. And then the other of remembrance is how you chant the holy name. I'll elaborate. If, when you're chanting the holy name, you're chanting the holy name in the consciousness that this is the most important part of my life, the most important part of my day, the moments that I spend chanting the holy name, this is the most important of all things. Then you give that kind of attention to Krishna, and when it's time to execute things, remember things that you need to remember, Krishna will give you that remembrance. Conversely, if you think this is a great time to multi-process things I have to do later today, that's less of an eligibility to get Krishna's remembrance. And certainly, in the essential part of remembrance, that is, that you're meant to do this thing in the mood of service to Krishna. You may even remember the thing, but not the consciousness behind the thing you have to do, and get entangled in the material energy, because the most important thing is your relationship with Krishna, which in the most important way of reviving that is the holy name. Undivided attention in chanting the holy name. As much as you can do that, you'll be in the remembrance position best. Because when the chanting is over, the opportunity for other types of service will be there, and Krishna will give you that intelligence too. Two tips for remembrance. Yes.
Let me say that we don't have to call the cause of the
This is the same question he was asking. You're referring to that verse from Bhagavad Gita? Krishna says, don't think of yourself as the cause of action. Are you on that?
Yes.
Okay.
If I do something wrong, could I just get away, you know, saying that?
No.
It's not me. It's the material world.
Once you're on the conveyor belt, you're also making choices. Once the person who's situated in false ego is still making choices. You can become angry, or you can be forgiving. You're making choices. For example, you can be on time, or you can be late. You're making choices. You can be clean, you can be not clean. You're making choices. You can't say, oh, I'm on the conveyor belt. The room didn't get clean. We're making choices. So there are these two categories. In one case, one is thinking, I'll make the place clean and I'll take credit for it. In another case, one is, because it's for Krishna, I'll make it very, very clean. I'm making this endeavor. We use the language, it's my service to make the place clean. But in more detail, I'm making this endeavor and Krishna's giving the ability to make this place clean because it's so important because it's for Krishna. And then you're in Krishna consciousness simply doing a service for Krishna. You're not thinking in terms of being the controller of the circumstance, you're thinking of being the servant of Krishna. That person that lives very far should try to make little pilgrimages to where there's devotee association. Is that your case? Here you are. Congratulations. And Srila Prabhupada has given us a teaching, the Yukta Vairagya teaching, Rupa Goswami's teaching, that we can use things in Krishna's service and that way stay engaged in devotional service. So we have technology, we have recording devices. So I may be a remote place, but I can perhaps get association by using technology. Recordings of something, or there are all kinds of distance learning things and Bhagavad Gita classes with teleconferencing, etc. So where there's a will, there's a way. And it's not the same as, you know, being before Kishore Kishori in the temple room, but it's not, it's still association. There's some of these other types of association. Prabhupada explained it this way. There are two types of association, Vani and Vapu. And of the two, when there is Vapu, or physical association, you will get both physical association and Vani. But even when there is Vapu association, of the two, the most important is Vani, the sound vibration. And when you don't have Vapu, you have Vani. You can associate through sound and carry out instructions. So here, and technology provides us with opportunities. even, you know, live opportunities by hearing. During this seminar session, we're having morning classes, and the morning classes are broadcast live for people that are in a remote place and can't participate. And they're eager for that association, and they're feeling greatly fortunate. And that's good use of technology to get association. I'm sure if you discuss amongst the devotees, there's some ways by which you can make an, you know, serve, make some facility for that. And in that remote place, do a little groundwork and you'll get a little sangha of people to come together, and everybody will come and provide association in that remote place. And the next opportunity that you have to have regular association, you'll appreciate it much more. Just qualified your question by saying in a logical sense how it must be. So there's some very simple logical, it's not a proof, it's just logical. Here's one the Prabhupada uses a lot. Do you have a father? And does he have a father? And he had a father, and he had a father. And is it logical that everything comes from not a person? That's a simple one. If one wants to conclude, in the ultimate issue, everything comes from in person. Is that logical? Just using that one operative word, logical. We have personality. The Absolute has no personality. That means we're greater than the Absolute because we have something the Absolute doesn't have. So we're Absolute. The Absolute is relative, and we're Absolute. Or another one is, whatever you find in that which is created, is it similar logic? Is it absent? Or if you find something here, it must be there in the Absolute. So we find personality, there must be personality. Unless you just say, there's no personality here, then that's this Jagat Mithya, it's just false. Doesn't exist. Repeat after me. You have no personality. I have no personality. But we see personality. What exists here must exist in the Supreme. It must. And it does. Now we see a certain impersonality here too that exists in the Supreme. In the Brahma Jyoti, in its perfection, there's the impersonal Jyoti. But these are just logical. Then if we want to take a real simple one just from the authority of Scripture, then the Absolute Truth is realized in different features, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. And we find those, this is the logical part, we find those stages of realization of something even in ordinary somethings. You know, the something exists, something is localized and something has a personal existence. So, you know, the classic example is that of in the distance you see some rise on the horizon, and maybe it's a cloud, it looks like a mountain, but it exists. Then you get closer and it's a mountain. You get closer and you, all the variety. And the persons that live there, and the birds and the flora and the fauna, and animals, chipmunks, varieties of trees, different colors, different differences. But from a distance, it's... In fields of science, just spend some time with this information technology, intelligent design thing. So with molecular biology, it's really, you know, what is life? What is the origin of life? It gets, you know, really, 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 really detailed. And to say it just happens from nothing. Well, I'm sorry, that just isn't, not logical. That there's a scientist that was the author of, in the 1980s, an author of a book called Biochemical Predestination, who later on, after further study, realized that it's not that amino acids have inherent properties to get together with another amino acids and form proteins. It's just not inherent properties of amino acids to do that. There's got to be another explanation of how the amino acids get together. Then he says, one of his students asked in his class about what's the relationship of the configuration of bases in DNA with how amino acids get together. I don't have the answer to that. So he started looking into molecular biology. So there's all this detailed thing that they teach in science class now about DNA strands unravel and it forms an RNA carrier and it goes through the pore of the nucleus of the cell and goes to ribosome and forms the whole thing. And the amino acids come together and they make exchange amino acids and then it goes to another place and it gets folded and into a certain protein and the protein goes to the right place. So it performs a function for the cell. That's just within a cell. And there's how many cells? It just comes from an impersonal nothing. Make sense? Is it logical? How does life come into being? It's just some impersonal nothing. White light, it comes into being. It's not logical. There's some order, and there's systems, and there's machines, and our experiences behind those things. It takes a person to operate them and a person to create them, and that makes sense, that there's a person behind it all. But that's just logical. Subal.
You know, you quote the verse from the Bhagavad Gita, here and your imagination.
Yeah.
And I was just, you know, trying to think how, because it's very definite that you have to overcome both.
Yes, you do.
To be able to, you know, have some
proper understanding of Krishna, yeah.
In the correlation that you have those three things with the capacity to make appropriate choices, even when we're in a conveyor cell.
Yeah.
You then get out of that. So, if you can explain a little bit more of those three aspects in relation to help us, you know, make
appropriate choices. Okay, it's like the Bhagavad Gita class on that verse, huh? The short answer is, one cannot do that without the mercy of a Vaishnava. And the converse is, with the mercy of the Vaishnava, what can overcome those things? Now there's the overcoming part is just the mercy. And then there's manifestations of the mercy in the form of what will purify the heart, the chanting of the holy name, worshiping of the deity, and so forth. And then there's standard knowledge. The standard knowledge can help one overcome misconceptions and get into the right space. Attachment, fear, and anger. This material life is so problematic, forget it. And, you know, someone in University of Maryland, when I was visiting there, at the program at the university, someone came at the end, they poured out their heart, you know, my father was such a good person, and he was only 53 or 58 or something, and he died. And he had taught me all these good, virtuous things, and I've been doing them my whole life, but, you know, I'm angry at God. How do I deal with that feeling? So, when one is gripped by anger, you need association of devotees. I mean, there's standard knowledge. And she said, yeah, I say the same things to my mother, but it doesn't even satisfy me. Because it's without the life of transcendental knowledge, it remains information. It's the pious thing to say that she said to her mother, but without any realization. The essential realization came down to not accepting, you know, theoretically accepting that the soul of her father is eternal and all the good qualities of her father are somehow engaged in God's service somewhere in a very favorable circumstance, but not actually having sufficient faith and sufficient realization of the distinction between the body and the soul. It's my father is gone. My father has been taken away. Mixing the conception of self with the body and the satisfaction that I derive from the presence of that body in my life, rather than thinking of the welfare of the soul. Attachment, fear, and anger. Okay. So we need to, once again, we need the association of devotees. And we need to stay packed up or fixed up in that association, even if we're physically distant. And stay within that internal energy of the Supreme Lord and gradually grow in our Krishna consciousness by the mercy of the Vaishnavas and the endeavors that we make to take that merciful association nicely. That's the short answer. It's a nice verse from the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Vita, Raga, Bhaya, Krodha. That's how it begins. Okay, we're done. Thank you very much. Prabhupada, please.